Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is On the Ball on the United WeCast Network, and I am Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me now on the Fox Sports app. You can also follow me on both Twitter and Instagram at Rick Bucher. I'm a lot of places. But there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily but not exclusively involving the NBA. And that is here. Now, as you, my regular listeners know, I don't generally have guests. They're annoying. They're troublesome. You got to go to the extra work to get them scheduled, and then half the time they don't show up. And so I just decided that I'm going to do monologues. But I am making an exception for my man, Burton Chawla. And why I'm making that exception, I have no idea, other than he does have a fascinating story to tell about the Vince Carter documentary that I recently appeared in. So with no further ado, I would introduce you and I would give them a bio. But as you know, from having gone out to dinner with me and my son, when he asked what does he do, meaning you, Burton, there wasn't a real defined answer. And I don't know that there still is. So welcome to the show.
Rick, I like being mysterious.
Yes, I know.
I like it. I think it's cool. But, you know, you have an idea of what I do and all the content I create. So,
oh, I know you do a lot. I just don't know how to describe it.
Right.
Like, what's your elevator? If you were giving an elevator pitch to someone to say, this is what I do, what is it?
I now say, and this evolved over the last couple of years, I now say I create content around athletes, primarily NBA players, and monetize it through relationships with brands and publishers. That's what I now say. Now, having said that, you know more than anyone, and I want to talk about Vince, but like, I also do a couple of other things. Like, I'm pretty good at like brokering Chinese sneaker deals. I'm pretty good at like, if PR is necessary, I do some PR, right? Like, I say that would be my elevator pitch, but you know, people that really know me, or when I'm really, really like trying to find a solution for maybe a new client, you know, I'm a jack of many, many trades.
Yeah.
Probably not a master of any, but a jack of many.
There's this strata within the NBA in particular, sports in general, that is inhabited by people like Burton. World Wide West is probably the greatest example I can think of someone who is knows a lot in terms of what's going on, knows a lot of people, is very connected. But I dare say if you ever asked anybody outside of West now being hired by the New York Knicks, you know, in the previous 20 years, if you ever asked anybody, like, what does West do? They would be as challenged to answer that as I'm challenged to answer exactly what.
Yes, I mean, everyone always goes with he's a connector, right? Like,
yeah,
right. So, you know, and I used to get teased by a couple of people like, you're a bridge builder. Like, I'd introduce this person to that person, right? So, but that's not how you make money, Rick. Like, it's beyond just connecting, right? Like, you know,
no, but there is value in that.
Oh, there's tons of value, and I'm willing to connect the right people together.
Yeah. You have to speak in the microphone, Burton. You went dark on us there for a sec. For a hot second.
Sorry. Yeah, I think I put my hand over it. Is this better?
Yes.
Cool. Sorry.
All right. Anyway, so you've been on like kind of the podcast tour. This isn't the only one you've done, and I'm not going to take that personally. But there have been some things that have come up on some of the other podcasts. Is there anything that you want to correct from previous appearances? Such as the significance of you getting fired? Do you want to like You want to reset that in any way, or is that?
I don't want to reset that.
You don't even want to talk about that.
I don't want to reset it. I'm getting killed on stuff like that. But yes, I've been fired before. It's actually happened.
What's that like? Because that's never happened to me. Like, I've left places, or I haven't completed. We haven't been able to agree on an extension or whatever. But I've never been like.
You're fired.
Pack up your stuff and get out.
What's that like? It's not shocking. It's more like you're down on yourself, right? Because as much as you want to defend it, or this is a bad boss, and you know they set me up or whatever, and all of those things, they're bad firings. This was not a bad firing. I was fired for it was not a good fit, not cause. It was more like this is not working,
right?
And more culturally than anything else. And to be honest, and I talk about it, to be honest, it was good. Jeff Schwartz at Excel fired me, and it was a good. He made the right decision. I was not culturally fitting, and I wasn't feeling like I fit. It's a lot like. I mean, here's a good transition into basketball. It's a lot like Ben Simmons. Like Ben Simmons is a very capable and good basketball player, right? Like wherever you rank him. He's a very good basketball player.
Yes, for sure.
You know, multi all-star basketball player, right? Probably the second best. If he's your second best player, you can win the championship, right? Like he's like one of that caliber.
I don't know if I go that far, but
I like going with it, Rick. But
I would say definitively he's in the top half of players in the league, and I might say the top third players in the league. So I wouldn't go necessarily second best, third best. Yeah, without question. I think he can be part of a championship team.
He's better than top third. Top third of the league is 150 players. He's not ranked 150 in the NBA.
I didn't say he was 150. Like, I think he's just in that mix.
Right. But I think he's in the top 10% of the league, I would argue. So, anyways, wherever you put Ben Simmons, second best player, third best player, the point is it's just not working. Right in Philly.
And hasn't, but here's the thing, it hasn't worked, Burton. That's the problem that I have with, in one respect, I appreciate that Daryl Morey just recently said, look, we're going to wait until we make a deal that we like. We're not going to be forced into anything. There's a part of me that appreciates that. But there's another part of me that says, you're in this predicament. And I have same with Doc Rivers, same with Joel Embiid. You guys are all in this predicament. Because you refused to see what was clear for years, which was this combination between Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons was not going to work. Before the personalities ever came apart, before you ever got to the point where the disappointment rose to where now we're pointing fingers, you needed to take an honest look at it and say, you're trying to make two round pegs fit into square holes.
Do you think I don't fully disagree with you. I think the personalities played a bigger role than you're letting on.
I'm not saying they didn't. But from a basketball standpoint, we already knew that they didn't.
So from a basketball standpoint, what's the argument? The argument is that like Ben doesn't shoot.
The argument is that for me, Ben at best is a point forward. Ben has to play like we now see Giannis Antetokounmpo playing, which is below the free throw line. If I can put him in position where he's a step or two away from the basket when he catches it, now all of his passing ability, now he's a dual threat. He can score or he can set somebody up. If you're going to do that, now you have to play Joel out at the three-point line. I don't want to do that. I'm compromising what Joel is capable of being.
Right, and it works in Milwaukee because Brooke Lopez on the three-point line makes sense. Whereas Joel Embiid is the best post player in the NBA.
Right.
Okay. I agree with that, but I definitely think the personalities mattered, and I think it accelerated this thing.
And it's pecking order. Like Brooke at this point in his career, he's okay being the complimentary guy.
Right.
Joel and Ben are still trying to prove that, like they're still trying to establish who they are and what they are.
I think Ben needs to play with guys that can fill it up so he can just do the thing he wants to do, which is rebound, play defense, and pass, right? Like, I honestly think he can be like a bigger Jason Kidd if he had the right personnel around him and also mentality. He doesn't have the mentality. Jason's mentality was different. Like, go get that defensive rebound, start the break, right? The mentality is probably the biggest piece that's missing from Ben Simmons. I was told through the grapevine, and you know I have many sources, that a big part of why Ben Simmons never participates in the Australian national team is because the main captain, Joe Ingles, doesn't want him on the team because he doesn't work hard, doesn't have the mentality. Ben Simmons physically is better than any player on the Australian national team. And he's not on it because the captain's like, nah, you're going to make us worse. This goes back to fit and culture, right? Yeah. So,
but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of guys, there's a lot of 6'8 guys with 40-inch verts on the streets. There's a lot of guys with tremendous athleticism, tremendous size, who can't play.
Yeah.
Taco Fall. Like, you look at that, people are like enthralled with the size and everything. But he can't play. You can't play him in the NBA. People will take him apart. And the difference is the game has changed. Like, you compared him to Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd realized the game had changed, and he developed a three-point shot.
You're right. You're right. I mean, it goes back to he's got to learn. Every guy in the league, like,
that's the greatest mystery to me is, well, look, I'm watching Lonzo Ball shoot the ball, right? His stroke is completely different.
Yes.
Than it was 2 years ago. Completely different. Shout out to Fred Vinson, who was instrumental in making that happen.
I mean,
shout out to Lonzo Ball for having the discipline to change it.
Yep.
Why Ben has not even added like an 18-foot jumper is a complete, like, no one has been able to answer that. If I was able to sit down with Ben one-on-one privately, that would be my, or anybody who could inform me on that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm dying to know. Because that's a benefit for you. And like, you've had years to do it. It's like, there's a resolve almost not to do it. Like, I'm not going to do this. It just seems so obstinate and self-inflicted wound.
Where do you think he ends up?
I don't know at this point. I really don't. I would expect that it's like a Sacramento or a Minnesota, or it's a team that will look at him and he can look at it and say, I'm rebuilding, and you can get the star player from that particular team, a Buddy Hield or whatever, that allows Philadelphia to say, hey, we got the star player we were after, even though it's not a bona fide, it's not a Bradley Beal, it's not a Damian Lillard, right? There is a distinction, but for the casual sports fan or casual NBA fan, they'll look at it and go, hey, they got the shooter they wanted.
I honestly think if you get healed, like Bagley wants out, right? He wants out of Sacramento. Yeah. So if you do Bagley and healed, and some sort of player, I'm not mad at that trade. Like, I would die. And we can get to more in a second. And maybe I think about it. If you gave me Bagley, Hield, and the kid that they picked in the first round, Davion Mitchell, for Ben Simmons and Maxey, I would do that deal.
Oh, yeah, I would too. But I don't know that I'm giving up Davion Mitchell.
For Ben Simmons, two-time All-Star?
Well,
25 years old?
You're giving up Buddy Hield, Davion Mitchell, and who?
And Bagley, who doesn't want to be there, and they don't want him there anyways.
Yeah,
so there's not a high value on Bagley, right? Like, he's the easiest. But I mean,
keep in mind. So you have what you have in Davion Mitchell. You have it on a rookie contract.
Yeah, but I'll give you Maxey too, right? So Maxey and Simmons. So Maxey's on a rookie contract.
Yeah, we could talk. As long as I'm not giving up Haliburton, I'm okay.
Right. So look at that trade. I would do that trade. Then the other trade, let me ask you this one, and I have differing opinions from other people that cover the league. Would you do D'Angelo Russell, Josh Okogie, and McDaniels? and a pick.
If I'm Minnesota? Simmons,
from Minnesota for Ben Simmons and Maxey.
Yeah, but I wouldn't do that if I was Philadelphia. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do that?
Because I don't think D'Angelo fits that profile.
So to me, fits what profile? All-star?
Yes. All-star, okay. So, go-to scorer on a winning team.
I completely agree with you that he doesn't fit that profile. I always thought he was overrated and couldn't believe he made an all-star team. But I would argue he fits better with Joel as a shooter because he shoots threes. And I would argue what you're getting, Josh Okogie is maybe the best defender in the NBA. He just doesn't get love because he doesn't, you know, he's not a scorer. And you get a young McDaniels player. I would argue the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. I would argue, like, whatever that saying is. Like, I just think Morey, and let me get into Morey's right now. Like, I just think Morey has to get superstar back. Otherwise, he doesn't want to do this. Like, right. getting the deal, the Sacramento offer I just made, I think that's a great deal. I honestly, they should have taken, if Malcolm Brogdon was actually available to them over the offseason, they should have made that trade.
I like, agree.
But Malcolm Brogdon's not sexy, right? Like, Malcolm Brogdon's not.
No, he's just good. Miller.
He's very good, and he fits with Joel Embiid. Yep. I mean, a couple of years ago, he was 50, 40, 90. If Brogdon's healthy, he's a very, very, very good point guard and a Agreed. Very good closer and fits really well with Embiid. Agreed. So, I think Morey's on this, whatever journey he's on, he's always got to be the smartest guy in the room. And I think he's messing. I honestly blame him more than anyone.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I want to get to the doc. I want to get to the Vince Carter story because that's really why I brought you on. And I may even just delete everything we talked about to this point.
Who wants to hear about my opinion in Philly?
Yeah. Or, you know, conversations that I think everybody in the world has had for the last three weeks. The Vince doc almost didn't happen.
Yeah. Almost didn't happen a few times.
Why?
Between getting Vince was hard in the beginning because, you know, I don't have a personal relationship with him or a history where he's just going to answer every call. And it took some convincing. And really, it was his mom who convinced him. He gave me the answers to the test. You know, he told me, go talk to my mom.
Uh-huh.
And then when I saw him in his eye, when he said that, I realized, okay, she might be calling the shots here. Yeah. And it's not that she was calling the shots, but he's so close to his mom. And that's his me convincing his mom is what convinced him to do it. And his mom used the word legacy, and that's how we got to the title, Vince Carter Legacy, free on Crackle TV. I got to do the promo, Rick.
Sure. Hey, I'm in it, so I'm happy for you to promote it.
You're all over it. You're all over the trailer. Like,
I was stunned to watch it and to see that I was in it as much as I was. Because as I've done many of these things before, you know, you spend an hour and then there's like two clips, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, do you remember doing the interview? It was also 2020. It was in Chicago. It was a long time ago, though, right? Like that. So that's the other part of the movie. Like, the movie takes place during COVID. And that was the other reason this thing almost didn't get finished. Like,
but there's a great story about when you were either supposed to meet with him or you were supposed to get together the day. What happened that day that blew it up?
Yeah. Hard to get him. And we finally got him on board when his mom convinced him. And then the first day of shooting was his birthday, which is January 26th, Vince's birthday. But it's also the day Kobe died. And, you know,
the day, not just the anniversary date, like the day that the helicopter went down was the day you were supposed to shoot.
That morning. Well, we didn't know the helicopter was going to go down. Obviously, we flew in the morning and we landed in Atlanta to the news that Kobe had died. Because it was this early Sunday morning, if you remember.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously we wanted to be respectful, and we were all feeling it. Kobe meant a lot to the basketball community, right? I mean, he's a superhero. And for a lot of people on Mount Rushmore, and you know, you and I have had this conversation. So, and from Vince's perspective, obviously they played against each other. They're same age. That's his contemporary. Mm-hmm. Kobe was his contemporary, right? And for a long time, Kobe, Vince, McGrady, I always argue Paul Pierce, and I'm sure you're going to argue against that, but like those were the guys, right? Those were the guys that were contemporaries against each other, the same way Durant, Giannis, and Kawhi are LeBron's contemporaries, right? So, and then even further, and when we really dove into it, while we were making the movie, and we obviously, you know, committed some time to Kobe, like we Vince said, I played on an AAU team with him when I was like 15 and he was like 14 or something like that. So they've known each other forever. And this is back in the day when, you know, kids didn't team up on AAU teams. Right. They just happened to play on a team together. So there's like that friendship there, and, you know, that obviously mattered. So then that happened and we took some time off. I don't remember if we shut down for a whole week or if it was like 3 or 4 days. I don't remember. We just, we decided, you know, we obviously weren't going to shoot the day we were supposed to. And then we took a couple of days. We took a beat and just kind of chilled and told Vince, you know, whenever you're ready, we're ready. And then, you know, fast forward a couple of months, COVID hits, right? And the world shut down. And, you know, from our perspective, you know, if you could think back to March 2020, I think we all were like, this will be over in 2 months, right? Or this will be over the summer. And we all know it wasn't.
Yeah.
And then each state, you know, to layer more, each state has different rules when it comes to COVID and production and all this stuff. And we had to follow the rules. And then more, what really stopped us was the NBA set rules, right? They were saying NBA players and personnel, which includes owners, could only do X, Y, and Z. The only way you could do it, you can't do an interview unless it's, you know, approved and it has to be this and all that. We had Mark Cuban slated to do the movie and he couldn't do it because the NBA wouldn't let him because this was not an NBA project. It wasn't necessary to do it. Like the only way, and then we had certain production guidelines, like to do a remote shoot, like Mark basically setting the camera up for himself. My head of production was like, we're not doing it that way. We're not shooting it that way.
Yeah.
All of this stuff. And there's more, Rick, that some of it I'll keep to myself. One thing I'll tell you too, Kobe agreed to do the film. Like I talked to Kobe's people the first week of January and they were in. Mm. So, you know, a lot of turmoil behind the scenes, but I will say again, you know, promo my team. Well, first Vince was great. Vince was gave us more time than he had to. My production team, shout out to Lineage Digital, Blake, Lori, Katie, my boss, Anthony, all stars.
Okay. This isn't the Emmys. Okay.
Yeah, no. Right. I'd like to, and then Crackle. I had good part. Look, Rick, we talked about Ben Simmons, right? Getting it back to basketball a little bit. Like you have to have good teammates, right? Like you don't win the championship with bad teammates. Like,
yeah. No, you know, any process like that. By the way, I did a cover story on Vince for ESPN, the magazine, probably 15 years ago.
Okay.
Same process in terms of mom was very influential on anything that he did.
Yep.
And I went to China with him, which was really an extraordinary experience because it was me, him, his Nike crew. It was a Nike tour. Right.
Is this the peak of insanity?
This is peak of insanity.
Okay.
And I think he was like on the cover in a silver space suit or something like that. And I mean, our covers were pretty creative. But my goal was, so they had the van that had Vince, his security peanut. Mark Eversley, I believe, was with Nike at the time, and a Raptors trainer, and I forgive me for forgetting his name. And I was in the second van, and my whole goal was I got to get in the first van. And by I think it was day two or three, I got the invitation. To ride.
Oh, it was like assigned seating. It wasn't like whenever you get down from the hotel, it was assigned seating.
No, it was like buses for teams.
Okay, got it.
You have the player bus, and then you have all the rest of personnel on the second bus. Fans, family, personnel, trainer, like everybody else is on the second bus. I needed to get on the first bus.
Yep.
And it was hilarious because it was first bus shenanigans.
Right.
Like
right.
We're playing punch buggy or who's the first person to see a cat, a cat or a bird. Like, we were in Beijing. Like, you saw no animals anywhere as you were driving down the street. It was kind of spooky, right?
Yep, yep.
Just all kinds of weird, goofy stuff
right.
going on in the first bus. But it gave me a great appreciation for just how, like, and this is why I was excited to do the doc, because like Vince is a fascinating character because he's such a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete and rose to such heights because of that, and was such a performer and was so gifted in so many different ways. And yet there's a real normalcy about him as a person. Like, it's just,
he's very normal.
He's very level headed and balanced in his view of life, which I think in some ways may have undercut his greatness as a player, because Kobe was so like single-minded.
Yep.
It had such a zeal for, I'm just cutthroat. Jason Kidd, the same way. Like, yeah. Vince was not that. Vince.
Do you think Tim Duncan was that?
What's that?
Do you think Tim Duncan was that?
I think there was a certain degree of that with Tim. Yes, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. There's just guys that have that great white shark mentality.
Yeah.
It puts them over the edge. And then there are guys that don't have that, and they may not rise to the same heights as the great white sharks as basketball players, but I think that their lives, they're more comfortable in their own skin with and without the game.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that I think Vince got there. I think he got there at the end of his career where he was
in terms of what, having the killer mentality or whatever.
No, in terms of like, I'm ready to walk away and, you know, I there are other things I can pursue, right? I think you're right. Yeah. I think he was just hyper-talented, but didn't have what, you know, the quote-unquote Mamba mentality, right?
Like, dude, but I think he always had that. I mean, I think he always saw, he had a perspective on the game that I would say was always healthy. Yeah. And I think that was born of how he was raised.
Yeah.
Because normally a guy with his kind of natural ability. I mean, I will never forget being in China, and we're in this, I don't know what space it was. It was like a warehouse. It's like they created a court just to put on this exhibition. And I remember the guys with Peanut or Mark or whoever it was, they were like, I think he's going to try the 720. Like, he was going to try to do a full double spin dunk. Now, he hasn't been playing. He hasn't warmed up. I think he did like a quad stretch, right? Before, just like the typical. And he was just, and I say it in the doc, like, he would just try to imagine what he wanted to do physically, and then he would go do it, which is the true like genius Picasso level artistry of Vince Carter.
Yeah.
And here he's doing it in China, like, time change, like, we're all still half asleep, we're still getting adjusted, he hasn't warmed up at all, and he's about to do this physical, and he did it. He did it. There was, I don't know that there's any video out there, but we just, like, all looked at each other, like, just, you know, mouths dropping open. And it, not only, he didn't, like, you know, do the Superman and you know, primal scream, he kind of just did it, and it was like, okay, I pulled that off. And it's just, that so was casual. Him.
His athleticism was casual, right? He was just so casual the way he played. And he was
so natural.
So natural. Yeah, that's probably a better way to put it. What's your, you think he's the greatest in-game dunker of all time?
Well, the Frederick Weiss dunk kind of puts him in that special plateau and in-game dunker.
I would say,
I don't know. Dominique. Two-footed.
Yeah.
Like, he was nasty. He was,
you know, did I ever tell you, like, my favorite player growing up was Dominique Wilkins, because I grew up in New York, so you get the local teams, right? Mm-hmm. You get the Knicks and you get the Nets. But when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, TBS, exactly.
Yeah.
The Hawks were a national team to me.
Yeah.
Like, I watched more Hawk games than I watched Knick games. And I don't know if it was just by coincidence. I used to, like, God, what a, like, I, the reason I got into the Hawks, and we don't have to spend too much time on this. I really like wrestling. Like, I love WWF. So I was like determined to learn everything about WCW. Like, before my brother, like, I'm going to have all this information about Ric Flair and Sting. And so I used to watch WCW. But before WCW would start, like, because it would start at like, you know, 9:30 on a Saturday, you got to watch the Hawks. Or like during summertime, you'd watch the Braves. So I ended up becoming a Hawks and Braves fan. And Hawks never overtook the Knicks. The Braves overtook the Mets. But like Mookie Blaylock, Craig Elo, Dominique, Kevin Willis, John Konkak, like Adam Keefe, the Plastic Man. Like, you know, I could still name the team right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Dominique was really good. I would vote Vince, but it's close. It's close.
So we've gone much longer than I normally go. That's why I don't have guests, because we just blather on. But
right, cut it.
I will. Oh, don't worry. That said, your takeaway from doing the Vince documentary, like, what's the most lasting thing that you take away from that experience? Either what you learned about him or the process of doing it. That you walk away and this is what changed me. This is what changed me, or this is what I took away from doing that project.
Professionally, I would say that the big takeaway for me is that there's money in this space and opportunity, and I want to do more of them. Tactically, I would say really key component of making a movie or a follow doc or content, pre-production. Like, you got to have the right producer and director, and you have to have this thing mapped out, because you cannot control what people will say, do, or what happens. I can't control if a helicopter crashes or if we have a global pandemic not seen for 100 years. So I would say pre-production would be the first thing, from a tactical standpoint. And then just from a personal standpoint, like I said, I want to do more of this. I really like the storytelling part of it.
Fair enough. Burton, thanks for joining me. It took us a little bit of time, but we managed to get it done. Cool. I do have to ask, why are you wearing an Expos hat to do this?
I just think it's a cool hat. I actually want to do a documentary about lost fandoms. Like,
oh, that's very good.
Yeah. And like that 94 team that could have won a World Series. I actually want to do it. I just think it's a cool hat, but yes, that's one day maybe.
Okay. All right.
Cool. Rick, appreciate you.
Thank you. You got it. All right. That does it for this episode of On the Ball on the United WeCast Network. Please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. I know that conversation may have come at an odd time with the NBA's 75, list of 75 coming out. I do plan to write about that on the Fox Sports app or foxsports.com. Please go look for that. That'll be appearing in the next 24 to 48 hours. And then there's, of course, the great Warriors-Clippers matchup and what we saw from the Hawks and the Mavericks. All of that we will get to at some point coming up. It is this beginning of the season, so there is still plenty of time to address all of that. But in the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.